This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Bonnie North. 75 years ago this month, the Auschwitz concentration camp in Poland was liberated by the Russian army. The days that followed were filled with chaos as the liberators grappled with how to care for those still alive in the camp. There were warehouses full of things stolen from those interred at the camp, like shoes and glasses and other personal items. And somewhere in all of that turmoil, there was a small schoolbook, a diary belonging to Rivka Lipschitz from the Łódź ghetto. The notebook passed through many hands before landing at the Galicia Jewish Museum in Krakow, Poland, where it inspired an exhibit, The Girl in the Diary. The exhibit is making its U.S. public premiere tomorrow at Jewish Museum Milwaukee. Molly Dubin is the curator of the exhibit at the museum, and Jakub Nowakowski is the director of the Galicia Jewish Museum. They joined Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the discovery of the diary and investigating the story behind it.
Rivka was a Jewish girl born in the Polish city of Łódź. She was born in 1929 in the Orthodox Jewish family, and she lived her life in Łódź. Things has changed during the war. And to make long story shorter, at some point in 1945, actually right after the liberation of the Auschwitz Birkenau camp, just around we are just about to celebrate the 75th anniversary. So 75 years ago, a diary of Rivka Lipschitz is being discovered in the ruins of Auschwitz. So the question is, what happened with Rivka? How the diary ended up in Auschwitz? What happened with her outer after Auschwitz? These are all questions that were asked, and some of the answers will be given at the museum in the exhibition.
As you kind of allude to here, the title of the exhibit is Searching for Rivka in the Łódź Ghetto. What does the term searching in the title, what does that really mean in this context?
I think it's got two meanings. There's certainly a physical meaning in terms of wanting to physically find out what Rivka's fate was, but it's also about finding out who Rivka was in terms of her identity. And getting an inkling of that through her writings in the diary. That's one of the things that is so incredible about having discovered this notebook, which, you know, because of how it was found and being passed down, you know, to several individuals before it was eventually brought to Jewish Family and Children's Services in San Francisco, where it was authenticated and began to be translated. It starts to reveal not only a documentation of a period of time within the Łódź ghetto that we had very few voices speaking to before, but also it's very much a coming-of-age story set against a backdrop of atrocity. So it's this very fascinating combination of giving you a glimpse into what daily life was like, the hardships, everything that was suffered in terms of the limited resources, the hunger, the fact that the Łódź ghetto was made into this huge slave labor camp. All of those things come through in the diary. But, you know, above all else is really this incredible voice who is seemingly coming out of, you know, the dark from decades previously that we never knew we would have the chance to hear from. So to hear her talk about being in the ghetto, but also the things that she's experiencing in terms of wanting to find love, you know, what does it mean to find love? Who do I have relationships with? The importance of my relationships with my friends here or with my cousins who she wound up needing to live with because both of her parents perished. So you have all this kind of teenage angst, if you will, that you would expect from that time period, that juxtaposed with the narrative of this taking place in a ghetto at a horrifying, unimaginable time is just a compelling insight. And we hope it will really engage people on many levels.
You know, I think many people are familiar with the diary of Anne Frank, another young woman living through the Holocaust. And diaries and these kinds of very personal takes on what happened at that time have become so integral to our understanding of that time period. Why are things like diaries so important for our understanding of the Holocaust and the many events that happened around it?
The diaries are allowing us to narrow the point of view. I mean, we know lots about the big events of the Second World War. We know about the German policy toward the Jews of Łódź and about the context of Rivka's situation. What is missing in those big documents, those big data that we have, is the emotions, the feeling, the daily decisions that are lost. And the diaries are allowing us to get a grasp of those very the moments that are, you know, gone with the wind otherwise. So I think that what makes the diaries so powerful, because they are often written in the first person. Sometimes they, with Rivka's diary, they were not meant to be published. Rivka is addressing her diary directly. My dear diary, I had working classes today and so on and so on. Rivka doesn't think about this as a publication. That's for her actually. This entire writing started as a practice. It was a homework for one of her teachers, perhaps also as some kind of attempt to mentally help the students, the young kids, to cope with the tragedy that is happening around them. The emotions that we are able to understand because we do feel them in our daily life. I mean, Molly said this hunger for being appreciated, the feeling of being alone, fear. These are things that we can relate to, of course, despite many changes and many differences in our situation. But these are things that connect us through the time and through the different situations rather than divide.
You know, just expanding on what Jacob said, it's that idea of the personal dimension. So often when you are educating about the Holocaust or sharing narratives about the Holocaust, especially for younger generations, it's hard for them to wrap their heads around this vast idea of 6 million lives lost and all the contributions to the world that were extinguished with those lives. And it's the personal stories that get lost, unfortunately, a lot of times in trying to understand the enormity of the atrocity. So to have those personal dimensions, as Jacob said, allows us, you know, in contemporary society, today's day and date, here we are, you know, reflecting 75 years later, we're able to connect to Rivka. We've experienced some of those same emotions and some of those same worries and challenges. And also, as Jacob said, the diary really kind of took everything. It was her friend, her confidant, her support. It was a means of catharsis. It was everything that I'm afraid to say or cannot say, I'm going to pour into these pages. Certainly, there was no thought that this was going to be published. So it's just brutally honest. And I think that is also what helps us to make that direct connection to her.
You know, you mentioned that Rivka's diary was one of few personal documents about the Łódź ghetto. What were some of the things that her diary really illuminated about daily life in Łódź?
The Łódź ghetto is pretty well documented. I mean, we know about the German policy, we know about its leadership. Rivka is at the very, very end of the food chain. She, in her diary, she writes nothing about, you know, the big things of the war. She doesn't write about Chaim Rumkowski, the head of the ghetto. She is only a receiver of those comments, of those situations. So it allows us to understand what was the reaction of the very common, simple person to those big things. I mean, when we know from our perspective what is happening on that day. She is absolutely unaware of the things, of the preparations to deportation. She's unaware of why certain things are happening. She helps us to understand what was the reaction of the people, why people were not seeing what we think was obvious. We know how the story ends. Rivka and many millions and so many other victims couldn't have seen what is coming because it never happened in the history before. is also allowing us to understand are the networks that were created by regular people that were, you know, were created in order to help each other, to support each other. Rivka's diary is very special, and Rivka was special because she was coming out of the Orthodox family, which means she lives among women and among girls. Men in that diary are mentioned, her father, her brother, some teachers, but they are in the context. So that's something that is very unusual, because when you're reading about the war and diaries of the war, many of them are coming from men, are about men. Rivka's diary is about women. She lives with the women, she lives among the women, her friends and colleagues are women. She feels uncomfortable when there is a boy coming, you know, for a class. And that makes it very, very unusual, because we don't have this kind of voices coming out of the Orthodox Jewish women that survived. What makes this story even more unusual or more powerful is that actually the woman's story that does not end in Auschwitz. You know, the Rivka diary was found by a Russian women doctor in January 1945, then passed on, as Molly said, to other people. And 7 years later, 6 years later, it is granddaughter of Zinaida, Anastasia, that brings the diary to the States. And in the States, these are another women, like Dr. Anita Friedman and her colleagues in San Francisco, that are undertaking the task of translating the diary and so on. So we have an entire chain of women that reacted, that made some decisions and allowed us to understand this story, which we think is very powerful. And when we created this exhibition back in Krakow, we decided to honor this special relation. And the exhibition, the text of Rivka diary is expanded with the comments of experts, because Rivka doesn't explain us why she's hungry, why she's starving, what happens. So we have experts, historians, psychologists, rabbis that are helping us to understand what she is reacting to. And all of them are also women. We wanted to honor this reality of Rivka's world that was world of women. We didn't want her to feel uncomfortable in this very symbolic way. And I think, again, that's something that makes this entire story very special and important today.
We should clarify, you know, there certainly are diaries of young people that have been recovered. But as Jacob said, the majority are male voices. Of course, as you mentioned earlier, we think of Anne Frank when we think about the female voices. But the fact that she is Orthodox and the point of view that she's coming from, the existence that she's coming from, the fact that her belief and faith and traditions are a guiding force, really, in her survival. She struggles with needing to work on the Sabbath or on a high holiday because those are against her religion and her traditions. But it's also a saving grace for her, I think, that structure and that just honest, sincere faith that wavers occasionally. You hear the moments of doubt occasionally, but it's her faith that is also a huge sustaining factor.
So when people go to this exhibit, what should they expect to see?
They'll see a story of a girl that did nothing wrong, and that did everything she could to stay alive, that went through unimaginable, horrible evil, and did not lose hope. I mean, whether you're Jewish or Catholic or Muslim, this question of how to cope with the tragedy, the question of how, where's God in the moment of crisis, this teenager girl is giving us the answer. I mean, the God is in us. We are carrying the God in our hearts. And that's something that will be this universal lesson for all of us. But of course, the exhibition will give us also the context. We need to understand why Rivka is where she is, what happens, what brought her, and what happened later on. So the exhibition will also give us this historical context, will show us objects, original objects coming from United States Holocaust Memorial Museum and coming from Jewish Historical Institute in Warsaw, objects coming from Łódź, from which ghetto, that will be on display, and the photographs. I think one of the most important aspects of this exhibition are also the photographs. And when usually we learn or we teach about the Holocaust, we often use the photographs that came out of the German photographers. They are presenting us the Jews in a way the Germans wanted them us to see. So we see people working or just about to being shot. We see dead bodies. We see people in, you know, skeletons. We don't see people that we can relate to. What we put together is a collection of photographs that are showing the actual living figures, people that are within the ghetto, that are living just, you know, a few months or weeks before being sent to gas chambers in Auschwitz or Chełmno. But they are still holding to the things that make them human. They still are able to love, and they are still able to cherish the daily small things. I think that's what makes this set of photographs very unusual, because they are showing us the living human beings, something that is easy to forget when we look at those Nazi photographs.
Absolutely. And the Galizia did such an incredible job of really developing this exhibit and compartmentalizing it to understand the narrative. So you really have an introductory section that speaks to life in the Lodz ghetto, the establishment of the ghetto. There are facsimiles of newspaper articles, of documents that are showing the establishment and, you know, the rights that are being stripped from the Jewish community. And then we move to the central component, which our changing exhibit gallery has been completely converted into a dark room, where there is a central interactive table with excerpts from the diary, commentary by scholars, rabbis, psychiatrists, as Jacob mentioned. There are artifacts from the ghetto. So you have that as the central piece. And then projected on the image, on the walls all around the gallery, are pictures of life in the Lodz ghetto. So you have three photographers, two who were Jewish and had photographic experience prior to being imprisoned. And we know the Nazis always like to kind of find out what kind of skill was available to them and to utilize it. So those two were really tasked with not only photographing for identification cards, documentation, but because of their role and their position, they were able to clandestinely take photographs as well, showing the Jewish community. And then the third photographer was a Nazi who was the head accountant of the ghetto. His feelings much more have that kind of documentary feel that Jacob alluded to, of Jews as really just kind of objects within a composition versus showing the life and what is going on in that community behind those walls. So that juxtaposition of those images with artifacts that have been pulled out of the rubble of crematoriums and these words that are coming to us decades later, it is incredibly powerful. And then the last component is really looking at the discovery of the diary, its authentication, and the research that happened following its discovery, and some really surprising things that came to light, that there was one thought about Rivka's fate, and now there are documents that have come to light that give us pause, and we are still wondering what the ultimate fate of Rivka's life was. So all three of those together, the documents, the photographs, the artifacts, all of these things combine for what we really think is an incredibly powerful and resonant experience.
Yeah. Well, Molly, Jakob, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Molly Dubin is the curator of programs at Jewish Museum Milwaukee, and Jakub Nowakowski is the director of the Galicia Jewish Museum in Kraków, Poland. They spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about the Girl in the Diary exhibit at Jewish Museum Milwaukee. It opens to the public tomorrow. There's more information about it at wuwm.com.